welcome to another episode of Theology-ish.
How much of that were you rolling for?
Like 2 minutes.
Did you get my story about my dad?
A little bit of it.
My name is Ryan, one of your hosts. The other guy over there is William.
That's me.
And the other guy over there is Jesse.
Hey. He just sniffed the mic in a way that made me uncomfortable.
It smells like curry. But I
do you need to switch mics, Jesse? You keep talking about how it smells like curry.
You do.
Hang on a second. If I take off, no, I can't do that.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, how are you gents doing this fine morning?
I'm fine.
Just fine?
I'm very tired.
Me too.
Better than I deserve.
Oh my gosh, Ramsey? Dave Ramsey?
Rice and beans, beans and rice.
The only time you should see the inside of a restaurant is when you're working in it.
If you're in debt.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway.
You live like no one else, so later you can live and give like no one else. Yeah. See, I listen to Dave Ramsey too. Still
yeah.
in debt, but I've listened to him.
So anyway. What's new with you, gentlemen?
It's the new year.
It's the new year. I have a bit of a fun life update.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. You guys ready for this?
Yeah.
I quit my job as a truck driver because I got a new job as the junior high pastor at my church.
Wow. Did you actually?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, that's huge.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Did you say that in the last
Thank
episode?
You. Well, because we were talking about like Christmas and stuff. And
so are you going to get ordained? Because
I believe so. Yeah.
Is the title actually pastor?
It's like director of junior high ministries.
Okay, so not officially pastor.
Ryan's jealous.
I don't know.
I don't know. William knows as well. I am working on getting ordained right now.
Yeah, but that's a thing.
No, that's really awesome.
I am going to be a professional ministry man.
Nice.
So that's pretty sweet.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We're going to have now one, maybe eventually two actual pastors on this show.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Three even, because Jesse's working on it technically as well.
We'll see.
And that makes us automatically know things.
Yeah, well, at the very least, it gives us some credibility as somewhat qualified to sort of talk about some of this.
Yeah, and eventually I'll have a degree. So,
which is more than I'll be able to say at least. So,
yeah, so that's a pretty huge life update.
Dude, so when do you start?
I have.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm 2 weeks in.
How have you not told me about this in the last 2 weeks?
Because I wanted to get it on the show, to tell you about it on the show.
Oh,
so that way we can get Ryan's live reaction.
Okay, so I
to the news.
I have to visit your church again now and like sit in your class and see what goes on.
Well, you have to fill out a background check first.
I can do that.
You have to protect the children.
I passed the background check at this church several times.
I mean, so
I should be good.
I can probably let you sit in if you really want.
You'll be handcuffed.
So, your church then, so I'm guessing if you're saying junior high, they have it separated from middle school and high school?
Yeah. So, junior high service is on Sundays and high school's on Tuesdays.
Okay.
So,
and then
least it is right now. We will likely be tinkering with that in the near future.
Do you ever do like joint stuff where you smush them together for anything, or is it pretty separated?
So far, no.
Okay.
But again, we're gonna tinker with things, and see what works most goodly.
Hmm.
So,
man, well, that's a pretty big pretty big career change.
Yeah, yeah, quite the shift. I was a truck driver, and now I'm not.
No, I'm glad you actually did like get a job in ministry.
Though, yeah,
because now your degree isn't going to be wasted.
Yeah, I'm pretty hype for it.
That's massive.
Yeah, there was some shifting in the leadership strata at our church.
And you did mention that was happening a couple of months ago, that there was some stuff happening and that maybe you were looking at getting a job.
Yeah.
Not really sure.
That it was a possibility.
Yeah.
And now it's a reality. So
I'm still a lowly worship intern under Jesse, ironically.
Yeah.
So
in some ways, you're Jesse's boss. And in other ways, Jesse is your boss.
Yeah. Now, I'm his podcast boss, and he's my worship boss.
Don't think too hard about it.
Mm. So
Jesse Tokos,
we're actually just shy of 4 years since you and I came to this church, Jesse. So we're just shy of 4 years since I became your intern, because I did that pretty quickly after we joined the church.
Cute.
How have the last 4 years been for you, Jesse, with me working under your wing and tutelage?
Tutelage is a little far.
How have you seen Ryan grow as a person?
Aww.
Or have you seen him grow as a person?
No.
Well, you definitely gotten any fatter.
No.
No.
I've tried. Maybe that should be your New Year's resolution.
Get back in the gym.
Gain 20 pounds.
Get
back in the gym.
Eat more carbs.
Now that I'll be youth pastor and instead of truck driver, and I'll be able to more consistently gym.
Huge.
And thus, if you want to get them gains,
okay,
I can help you out.
Yeah. But in a very serious manner, I am very grateful for having had the opportunity to work with you the last several years, and I feel like I have grown because of that.
Your frontal lobes, though unseen, have definitely developed some, and you're starting to think more like a 30-year-old.
I turned 25 this year, so my frontal lobe should finish developing.
Just a bit. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep it real with you. When it finishes cooking, you can feel it. Yeah.
Yeah, I woke up one day, I'm like, what?
You're like, oh, no, I am completely conscious. Okay.
It's kind of terrifying.
Yeah. All of a sudden, the fact that you're going to die one day sets in. Mm. Your knees are going to hurt.
Yeah.
Very suddenly.
You got to get your golf
I've got the bad back already, unfortunately.
Well, that's because you don't have any muscle mass on
it's
your
It's because
back.
I have scoliosis, actually.
The muscle mass thing. Your lats have so much work to do and not much material to do it with.
Mm. Well, no, that's a really exciting update, William.
Yeah.
Have you shared that with the rest of my family just yet, or?
Sarah.
Yeah, it adds up.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so I haven't had an opportunity to tell your parents about it or anything yet, cool. So. Yeah.
Well,
you heard it here first, folks.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Pastor.
Thank you. Thank you. It's big. So, Jesse, please keep the dirty jokes to a minimum.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to have to not make dirty
Save
jokes.
Save them for William.
I'm going to have to not cuss anymore. We're going to have to get this thing locked in.
No Shelby Spong.
I can't. Don't have to be so careful.
Okay. I'm going to be a good person from now on. Pinky promise, probably.
Well, what are we talking about today, William?
We're going to be talking about the coal mines. No, we're going to be talking about Ignatius of Antioch's epistles.
Again.
And as we talked about previously, we lost audio for the first time we recorded this. So now we're recording it again. And we're going to be doing his epistle to the Magnesians and the Trallians.
Double dipping.
And we're going to go for it because they're short. And we're just going to read them aloud and talk about them as we go.
And we're going to read the whole things.
Because it's like six pages.
Oh, that's helpful for me.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't read it.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to start reading for us then, Jesse?
Well, Jesse's already read the first three paragraphs.
I did.
Let's have him read stuff that's new to him.
Okay.
So why don't you start us with the first two paragraphs? We'll do two at a time.
I can do that.
That way we can breeze on through.
Sounds good. All right. This is his epistle to the Magnesians. From Ignatius, whose other name is Theophorus, to the church at Magnesia on the Meander, blessed by the grace of God the Father in Christ Jesus, our Savior, in whom I send these greetings. All happiness to you in God the Father and in Jesus Christ. When I heard of the disciplined way of life your Christian love has taught you, it gave me so much pleasure that I decided to address a few words to you in faith, in the faith of Jesus Christ. As I go about these chains, invested with the title worthy of a God, I sing songs of praise to the churches, and I pray for their corporate as well as their spiritual unity. For both of these are the gifts of Jesus Christ, our never-failing life. May they be one in their faith and one in love, which transcends all other virtues. But chiefest of all, may they be one with Jesus and the Father, since it is only by enduring in him all the prince of this world's indignities. Yet still, eluding his clutches, that we can come to the presence of God. It was my privilege to have a glimpse of you in the persons of your saintly bishop, Damas, and his two clergy, the worthy Bassus and Apollonius, as well as my fellow servitor, Zotion. Is that right?
Yeah.
Zotion, the deacon. I should be happy in the man's company. He is as deferential to his bishop as he is to the grace of God, and to his clergy as the law of Jesus Christ. As to the law of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so, excuse me. Gosh, I got like a feather in my throat or something.
Mm.
Don't look at me that way, Jesse. don't look at me that way.
I'm just smiling at you, baby.
After we talked about no dirty jokes.
What? He didn't say anything.
There was a look. There was a look. Okay, if you want a bit of backstory about Ignatius and who he is and why we care about what he says, you can go and listen to our first episode on Ignatius where we go over like his time, where he's at, what's going on, all that stuff. Jesse was up with us for that one, too. So, welcome back.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. So, go back and listen to that if you haven't yet. Ignatius, right around the year 100, is writing all this, and he is very big on a few things. He's very big, one, on Jesus' full divinity, two, on Jesus' full humanity, and three, the unity of the church. So we have that again and again and again and again throughout all of Ignatius. In that first chunk there, is there anything that either of you would like to point out before we carry on? There's one thing I'd like to point out.
And I think the thing you want to point out is probably the same thing I want to point out. Okay. So.
And I think what you want to point out is what I want to point out, but I'm probably going to be surprised, and it's not going to be.
So you go first, Jesse.
Okay, yeah, Jesse, surprise us.
What did you want to point out?
As I go about in these chains, invested with the title worthy of a god.
Hey, that's what I wanted to point out.
That's what I wanted to point out.
That's crazy.
What's the title worthy of a god?
Let's see. Prisoner?
Last time we recorded this, Theophorus. I threw a few options out for possible.
I mean,
possible
it,
titles.
Is it Theophorus? Like
I suggested no. Theophorus, but we don't
probably
think
not.
So.
Okay.
I suggested martyr.
Could be.
Or it Jesus could be bishop. Gets,
maybe.
Any one of them.
Maybe. I think. For now, let's say persecuted one, because that happens to Christ. Christ gets persecuted, and that is a title worthy of Christ, who is God, and that is the title, to an extent, that Ignatius has. And if it's, you see? See how that be?
It's a name.
Yeah,
it's definitely.
Yeah. I don't know. He doesn't tell us what the title is.
Yeah.
He kind of just says that and leaves us hanging. So I think any of those, bishop, martyr, persecuted one, maybe Theophorus. Theophorus is something like God carried.
Yeah.
Or God held.
Or is it light of God? Theophorus? Because I see foe.
It's not.
I don't think so.
So it means something like God carried or God held.
Yeah.
There's this tradition that Ignatius is one of the little children that is brought to Jesus, and Jesus picks him up.
Theophorus is a Greek name that means God bearer.
God bearer?
Apparently.
Or God bared?
Bearer. Mm. As in like Mary, bearer of Christ.
Is that the AI? Is that the Google AI overview?
It is, which is why I'm questioning if that's true.
I mean, the Wikipedia, which is the next step up, says that he was carried by Jesus traditionally.
Yes.
Yeah.
Huh.
Anyway,
we don't know what the title is. He doesn't tell us. So any of those could be, but we don't know.
This is from Wikipedia. Literally meaning bearing or carrying a god. So do it that way, you will.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to read paragraphs 3 and 4, and then we'll chat about those. For your part, the becoming thing for you to do is to take no advantage of your bishop's lack of years, but to show him every possible respect, having regard to the power God has conferred on him. My information is that the sacred clergy themselves never think of presuming on the apparent precocity of his rank. They give precedence to him as a sagacious man of God, or rather not so much to him as to the bishop of us all, the father of Jesus Christ. So for the honor of him who loved us, propriety requires an obedience from you that is more than mere lip service. It is not a question of imposing upon a particular bishop who is there before your eyes, but upon one who is unseen. And in such a case, it is not flesh and blood that we have to reckon with, but God, who is aware of all our secrets. One moment, please.
Gosh. You're struggling.
I am.
Would you like a water break?
I have a water. It's just, I've got Corona. Can I joke about that now? Has it been long enough?
I think so.
Yeah.
How long after
a global pandemic
is it uncouth still to joke about the pandemic?
I have actually had COVID 3 times. So I give you full permission to joke about it.
Okay, I got the COVID pass.
Yeah, we have the COVID card.
Yeah.
You're right. Fine.
Paragraph
I don't
four.
Think I have COVID. I might have COVID. I don't know. Paragraph 4. What it comes to is that we ought not just to have the name of Christians, but to be so in reality. Not like some persons who will address a man as bishop, but in practice take no notice of him. I do not see how people of that kind can be acting in good conscience, seeing that the meetings they hold can have no sort of valid authority. So for Ignatius, the gathering of the Christian and the Christian behavior has an inextricable link to the presence and authority of the bishop. The gatherings and meetings of the church are legitimate insofar as they have the valid authority of the bishop. This is something that Prots will not like and will bristle at and be like, no, equality,
priesthood of the believer.
Priesthood of the believer. We're all the same. Okay.
Leoplorodon. It's a magical Leoplorodon.
All right. Well, that's all well and good. How's that working out with you? How united is your church once we got the priesthood of the believer?
I don't like that word. The priest? Mary?
Priest?
No.
Ah!
Eucharist.
It's only a matter of time before Protestants get upset with you talking about Jesus, because that's Catholic.
But it is worth pointing out, though, because, like, for Ignatius, unity with your clergy, with your hierarchy at your church, in your local church, is not negotiable. It is, you are either united with your bishop, with your priest, with your deacons, or you are not. And if you are not, sorry, you can't play with us.
How many gates are there?
Uno.
Okay. Who is Christ? Those who go through the gate, you might call what? You might call them the church. So how many churches are there? Because there's one gate.
40,000.
No, that's not the answer.
You Jehovah's Witness?
No. That's not the answer I'm looking for.
It's one.
144,000.
There can only be one church because there is only one gate. So, how can you have legitimate leaders of the church that are not in good standing with the one church?
Capitulate to Rome.
Yeah, basically.
Anyway,
unity is real important. Jesse, would you like to borrow my paper copy, or are you good with your phone?
I'm good.
That's
with my
tiny
phone.
Text. I would not be able to read that. Is there anything else you guys want to point out or talk about in paragraphs 3 and 4, other than the unity stuff? And we're going to get our fill of that.
I don't think
harping
so.
On
not
it
for
too
me.
Much. All right.
I'm good with chugging.
All right, we're going to chug along. Jesse, paragraph 5 and 6, please.
All right. All things must come to an end, and there are two alternatives before us. They are life and death, and every one of us will have to go to his own particular place. There are two different coinages, so to speak, in circulation. God's and the world's, each with its own distinctive marking. Unbelievers carry the stamp of the world, while the faithful in love bear the stamp of God the Father through Jesus Christ. Unless we are ready and willing to die in conformity with his passion, his life is not in us. And now, since I have already seen with the eyes of faith and embraced your whole congregation and the persons of the men I named, let me urge on you the need for godly unanimity. I'm switching to my British because it helps me read better. Let me urge you the need for godly unanimity in everything you do. Let the bishop preside in the place of God and his clergy in the place of the apostolic conclave. And let my special friends, the deacons, be entrusted with the service of Jesus Christ, who was with the Father from all eternity and in these last days has been made manifest. Everyone should observe the closest conformity with God. He must show every consideration for one another, never letting your attitude to a neighbor be affected by your human feelings, but simply loving each other consistently in the spirit of Jesus Christ. Allow nothing whatever to exist among you that could give rise to any divisions. Maintain absolute unity with your bishop and leaders as an example to others and a lesson in the avoidance of corruption.
There he goes again.
Yep, unity. Something I want to point out that's not about unity.
Crazy.
Last time we went over this, I just about got sick of talking about unity because it's such a big deal for Ignatius. He says that special friends and deacons who are entrusted with the service of Jesus Christ, who is with the Father from all eternity and in these last days has been made manifest. So we have the co-eternality of the Son as a Christian doctrine that Ignatius is putting forward around the year 100. People who are enemies of the faith and therefore enemies of me will say that the Trinity is a later doctrine imposed on Christianity sometime in the late in the early to mid to late 4th century after Christianity and Rome get commingled under the leadership of Constantine. And that's when the Trinity is incorporated and it's done because, like, Rome doesn't want to give up polytheism. The Christians don't want to give up monotheism. They compromise and come up with the Trinity. That's a BS argument. It doesn't hold any water. It ignores history. It ignores so many things. This is one of the things it ignores. Here, around the year 100, 110 at the latest probably, Ignatius is saying that Jesus Christ is equally eternal with the Father. The equality of the Son with the Father is a very early Christian doctrine. It's not an invention from the 4th century. And I can't point that out enough. Anything else you guys are notice in that passages you'd like to talk about or touch on? If not, we can truck right along.
Yeah. Sounds straight enough?
Yeah.
All right, 7 and 8, Ryan. Please.
In the same way as the Lord was wholly one with the Father and never acted independently of him, either in person or through the apostles, so you yourselves must never act independently of your bishop and clergy. On no account persuade yourselves that it is right and proper to follow your own private judgment. Have a single service of prayer which everybody attends, one united supplication, one mind, one hope, in love and innocent joyfulness, which is Jesus Christ, and whom nothing is better. All of you together, as though you were approaching the only existing temple of God and the only altar, speed to the one and only Jesus Christ, who came down and the one and only Father, from the one and only Father, is eternally with that one and to that one is now returned. Never allow yourselves to be led astray by false teachings and antiquated and useless fables. Nothing of any use can be got from them. If we are still living in the practice of Judaism, it is an admission that we have failed to receive the gift of grace. Even the lives of their divinely inspired prophets were distinctly with Jesus Christ. Indeed, the only reason they were persecuted is because they were inspired by his grace, so that they might convince future unbelievers of the existence of the one sole God, who has revealed himself in his Son, Jesus Christ, word of his own from silence proceeding, whom in all that he was and did gladden the heart of the one who sent him.
So there at the beginning of paragraph 7, we have, again,
unity.
And the Lord, who was wholly one with the Father and never acted independently of him, either in person or through the apostles. So again, we have what some people would describe as proto-Trinitarian confessions. I don't think it's proto-Trinitarian. I think it's
Trinitarian.
Just Trinitarian. You don't get much more Trinitarian than the complete unity of the Father and Son. Unless you throw in the Spirit, too. And you, yeah. Hey, the gang's all here. And Ignatius gets to that later. So we have that again. It's not a one-off thing that Ignatius throws out in the middle of paragraph 6. It's all over the writings of Ignatius.
Yeah. Now,
anything else you guys want to point out or draw attention to?
Yeah. There in paragraph 7, we pointed this out last time, I think, too. On no account persuade yourselves that it is right and proper to follow your own private judgment. Have a single service of prayer which everybody attends, one united supplication, one mind, one hope, in love and innocent joyfulness, which is Jesus Christ, than whom nothing is better.
Yeah. How do you feel about that, Protestants?
So, priesthood of the believer. I have some positive thoughts about the priesthood of the believer and some of the positive things that can potentially come from that way of approaching Christianity. But Ignatius is saying, no, your judgment is bad. Listen to your clergy.
I don't know if it's bad. Insufficient, maybe?
Maybe.
Your judgment is insufficient?
Yeah, that might be the better term. Your judgment is insufficient. Listen to your clergy instead. Might be worth considering for us Protestants, perhaps.
Ignatius is assuming that the clergy are good fellas.
Yes.
Ignatius and his contemporary bishops, many of them were made bishops by apostles.
Yes.
They were handpicked by the likes of Peter and Philip and Paul.
John.
And... or they're the immediate generation following those mm-hmm. handpicked by the apostles. So they're probably in pretty good company
yeah.
as far as their clergy is concerned. And they're probably upstanding fellows of virtue. I don't know if we have that anymore.
Mm.
When I think about the way that Ignatius conceptualizes clergy, I very much get a bit of a sense of loss. I don't know if we can trust our clergy this wholly anymore.
Mm.
Because if you told everyone at all of the churches in the U.S. of A. to submit to their clergy, there would be much abuse of many different kinds.
We'd be in a lot of trouble.
And a lot of really crappy theology would get propagated. And that makes me nervous. So I don't know if this is still good advice. Jesse, what do you think? How do you feel about Ignatius's call to us to submit wholly to our bishop? I mean, insofar as we even have bishops.
Your clergy, we'll say.
Clergy.
Yeah, I mean, definitely at the time, it was a different time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at this point, this was after Nero, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nero's been dead for 30 years, 40 years, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I would really say it's a very, very special time in the history of the church. And I feel like there are certain gifts and certain things that benefited that early church that we don't get to experience today, right? So
you a cessationist?
Not a cessationist, no. But they didn't have the printing press, you know. They didn't have you really did have to depend on the clergy and the people who were closest to the action, right? Because there really wasn't a way for people to hear the word of God or to really know it like we do nowadays, and we take that for granted.
Well, let me ask you this, because Ignatius specifically says not to trust your own private interpretation. Mm-hmm. Does everyone having 4 or 5 copies of the Bible in their house and coming up with their own private interpretations of what the Nephilim are about, has that been a help to the church? Or has it created some problems? Like, without poo-pooing that or saying, oh, the Catholics were right when they got onto John Wycliffe. Not doing that, but has it created any problems, or has it all the way been a good thing? I don't know if it has all the way been a good thing.
If Jesse's it has created
his head.
Problems.
He's not saying yes because he doesn't want to admit it, but he's shaking his head in agreement.
Well, and the question becomes, if there are problems, and I think the answer is there are certainly problems that have come out of that, do the benefits and the good things that have come from that outweigh those problems?
And that's a debate for us to have some other time.
Indeed. But
I
don't know. It makes me think when I read that paragraph.
And it should. And, you know, I don't know. I don't think we live in the right kind of world for that anymore. And even if we did still live in the right kind of world where we had some church leaders that we could be unified under, how do you find them?
Pretty much everyone likes C.S. Lewis. He was cool.
That he's not a bishop. He's not around anymore.
It's true.
He's not saying to unite yourself under Peter, who's been dead for 40 years. He's saying unite yourself under your bishop, the guy that's still there.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do with that. Like I said, I get a profound sense of loss. When I read this.
I just think that I think he's zooming specific and then general. Right? Where he's saying, like, this is the way that you do it. The very specific way for you, this church that I'm writing it to. Well, actually, it's general, specific, general. And the same way as the Lord was wholly one with the Father, the key word, one, unity, yay, and never acted independently of him, either in person or through the apostles. So you yourselves must never act independently of your bishop and clergy. So general, like, Christ had unity with the Father. So for you, what that looks like, you specifically, this church, is to listen to your clergy, to your bishop, and must never act independently of your bishop and clergy. And so that's specific. But then it goes back into kind of what I would see as general, right? On no account persuade yourself, and I think this is still applicable today, on no account persuade yourself that it is right and proper to follow your own private judgment. This might be specific, but I think the key thing is just one, be one, be one, be one when you do this. Have a single service of prayer, which everybody attends, one united supplication, one mind, one hope, and love and innocent joyfulness, which is Jesus Christ, than whom nothing is better. So somebody like me would step back like, what? A single service? We shouldn't do a single service. We should do multiple services. But I don't think that's what he's saying. I'm just saying, rather than people going off and doing all this stuff, be united, be one,
right?
Be one as you do it.
Instead of, oh yeah, we go have the service over at the Joneses, and they go have service over at the Keiths, and then they have service at the Joneses.
Yeah.
No.
Well, and
you all come together and do one.
This does bring up an interesting question that's now applicable to you. As a middle school ministry director, should children be separated from the main body of Christ during service?
Well,
I don't want to talk myself out of a job.
No,
it is
an interesting question.
I don't want to lose it.
This is my interpretation of what he's saying, since it's not necessarily scripture per se. But rather than necessarily one service, only have one service, it's going back to the very beginning of that paragraph. In the same way as the Lord was wholly one with the father and never acted independently of him. If we are gathering in separate services where one is saying, oh, we are one with the father more than that one is, because you're trusting in your own judgment, right? So I think that's what he's getting at, is saying,
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm going to, and you can tell me if they're right. You're suggesting that this is Ignatius's advice to the church in Magnesia, but not necessarily all the time for everyone, everywhere, always. He's saying, hey, you guys need to watch out for this. Make sure that you're all being united in your Christianity and not having little splinter groups.
In a way, yes, because at the very beginning, when he does the greeting, he's very specific about who he is greeting and about the leaders who are there. So if he didn't vet those guys and trust them, maybe he wouldn't have said it.
Yeah, that's a good point. He's saying it because these are your bishops and clergy, therefore you listen to these guys. If you hang with, what's his name? If you hang with Damas, Bassus, and
Apollonius?
Apollonius. If you hang with these guys, you'll be doing all right. So just
do that.
Okay. I think that's fair. Yeah. I think that's fair.
I think it's a reasonable enough. If A plus B equals C, all that.
Yeah.
Right?
That tracks.
What we're assuming he is saying is these guys are walking in step with God the Father, just like Jesus. Therefore, walk with them so that you are doing the same, walking one with the Father.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Okay. We spent a lot of time on that one.
Well, sorry.
Keep trucking here. Who wants to keep reading?
I'll me.
8-9?
I'll do it.
Cool. No, 9-10.
No, you did 8-9-10. We have seen how former adherents of the ancient customs have since attained to a new hope, so that they have given up keeping the Sabbath and now order their lives by the Lord's Day instead, the day when life first dawned for us, thanks to him and his death, that death, though some deny it, is the very mystery which has moved us to become believers and endure tribulation to prove ourselves pupils of Jesus Christ, our sole teacher. In view of this, how can it be possible for us to give him no place in our lives, when even the prophets of old were themselves pupils of his spirit and looked forward to him as their teacher? Indeed, that was the very reason why he, whom they were rightly awaiting, came to visit them and raised them from the dead. I want to pause right there for just a second. You guys know in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus is crucified. And it says that there's like an earthquake and the sun is blackened out and the graves of many saints open up and they go into the city proclaiming Christ.
Yep.
And it doesn't get mentioned in any of the Gospels. And it's like, what the heck is going on here? I think Ignatius is referencing that event. He says this was the very reason why he, whom they were rightly awaiting, which is Christ, came to visit them and raised them from the dead, in reference to the prophets of old.
Mm.
So Ignatius seems to know a little bit more about that mysterious passage in Matthew than we do.
Perhaps.
Which, you know, makes sense. If he knew the apostles, that he would have gotten some clarification on that.
Well, not only that, Ignatius would have been alive during the time of Christ's crucifixion.
He would have been very young.
He would have, but he would have been alive.
He would have been alive. He might have been like 2 or 3.
Yeah. You know,
could have been quite young, like baby young.
And light enough to be carried.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. In the passage...
Can God make a baby heavy enough he can't pick it up?
No. In the passage in Mark where the children are brought to him, the Greek word is specifically paideia, which is baby.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's neat. Bring me the little babies.
Yeah. Do not let us be blind to his goodness, then. If he were ever to imitate the way we ourselves behave, it would be all over with us. Now that we have become pupils of his, Christ's, let us learn to live like Christians, to profess any other name, but that is to be lost to God. So lay aside the old good-for-nothing leaven, now grown stale and sour, and change to the new, which is Jesus Christ. have yourselves salted in him, and then there will be no scent of corruption with any of you, for it is by your odor that you will be proved. To profess Jesus Christ while continuing to follow Jewish customs is an absurdity. The Christian faith does not look to Judaism, but Judaism looks to Christianity, in which every other race and tongue that confesses a belief in God has now been comprehended.
So Messianic Jews, has bad news for the Messianic Jews.
Yeah, well, not a thing for Ignatius. Mm-hmm. And any things from paragraphs 9 and 10 that you guys are curious about, noticed, that jumped out to you that you want to talk about?
I think it very closely aligns to Scripture, because you have the Judaizers, right, mm-hmm. Who take things that are, like, no longer necessary and makes them a requirement to be a Christian, mm-hmm. right? So, like, even in paragraph 8, never allow yourselves to be led astray by false teachings and antiquated and useless fables. Nothing of any use can be got from them. If we are still living in the practice of Judaism, it is an admission that we have failed to receive the gift of grace. And then there's that mic drop statement that he makes, which is, you know, Christianity doesn't look to Judaism. Judaism looks to Christianity. So in some ways, there are things within Judaism that continues and points to Christ, mm-hmm. but those things don't themselves bring salvation. It is Christ.
Right.
So the prophets, even in a way, he says, learned under Christ in his spirit.
Yeah.
That's such an interesting statement.
So as modern Protestant people, mm-hmm. I'm not poo-pooing modern Protestant people. This is just the circle that I'm in, right? This, modern Protestant people read the Old Testament and we go, yeah, this is God the Father doing stuff in the Old Testament. Like, the word of the Lord comes to Jonah, and it's like, yeah, God the Father. That's how we talk about things. That may not necessarily be what an individual Protestant thinks, but that's usually how things are talked about. Is that square with you guys? Does that follow your experience? The Old Testament stuff is usually like, yeah, it's God the Father.
Yeah, it's either that, or you have the person who's like, oh, yeah, this is a Christophany. That's a Christophany. That's a Christophany.
Yeah.
Jesus is everywhere.
Which is the much more ancient way of reading it, starting with Ignatius and going on through all of the patristics, and this continues in the Eastern Orthodox Church today, and to an extent the Catholic Church. When the word of the Lord comes to Jonah and tells him to go speak to Nineveh, well, who's the word of the Lord? Christ.
Wow.
Wow, look at that. When Jacob wrestles with the Lord, it's the pre-incarnate Christ. When Abraham entertains the three men who are somehow God, it's some patristics will say that's the Trinity. But and then, here we have Ignatius kind of championing that view. He says that the prophets learn from Christ, the pre-incarnate Christ, because Christ is always. It's not waiting until Mary gives birth to Jesus for Jesus to be. It's waiting for Mary to give birth to Jesus for Jesus to be God incarnate. But that doesn't mean that Jesus wasn't doing anything prior to that. He was busy.
Verily, nothing was made apart from him.
It's true. It makes the Old Testament much more interesting, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Not because reading it as God the Father makes it uninteresting, but you start getting your red string out and your corkboard, and you're able to find the connections and see the way it all ties in. And I think it was pretty neat, personally. Anything else you guys wanted to point out about that?
No.
I just love that he calls the those practices like the sour old leaven.
Yeah.
Put that away.
Yeah. Salt yourself in Christ Jesus.
You want to read 11, 12, and 13, Jesse?
Might as well. In pointing these things out to you, my brothers, It is not that I know of any of you being actually affected in this way. It is simply that I am anxious, in all humility, to warn you in good time of the pitfalls of this shallow teaching. I want you to be unshakably convinced of the birth, the passion, and the resurrection, which were the true and indisputable experiences of Jesus Christ, our hope, in the days of Pontius Pilate's governorship. God grant that none of you may ever be turned aside from that hope. My desire is to enjoy every happiness in you, that is, if I am worthy of it, for even though I have chains to wear and you have none, I am still unfit to bear comparison with any one of you. For you, as I know so well, are wholly free from pride, having Jesus Christ within you. And I am aware that any praise from me only makes you more distrustful of yourselves, even as, in the words of Scripture, the righteous man is his own accuser. Do your utmost to stand firm in the precepts of the Lord and the apostles, so that everything you do, worldly or spiritual, may go prosperously from beginning to end in faith and love, and the Son and the Father and the Spirit, together with your most reverend bishop and that beautifully woven spiritual chaplet. Is that chaplet?
Mm-hmm.
Chaplet. I don't know what a chaplet is. Your clergy and godly-minded deacons, be as submissive to the bishop and to one another as Jesus Christ was to his Father, and as the apostles were to Christ and the Father, so that there may be complete unity in the flesh as well as in the Spirit.
So there in 13, we get Father, Son, and Spirit all there in one place.
Yep. Look at that.
And chaplet.
And chaplet.
A chaplet is...
Is it clothes?
No, it's prayer beads.
Ah, I see it. I pulled it up.
Yeah.
Similar but distinct from the rosary.
Yeah. I think a rosary is a type of chaplet, but not all chaplets are a rosary.
Yes.
All tortoises are turtles, but not all turtles are tortoises. Mm. All toads are frogs, not all frogs are toads.
Yeah.
All bourbon is whiskey, but not all whiskey is bourbon.
Exactly. Yes. Thanks for putting it in a term I can actually understand, Jesse.
All Jessies are Filipino, but not all Filipinos are Jesse.
Let's find them. The fakes.
Yeah. Anything you guys want to point out about that other than that juicy little bit where there's...
The Trinity. Which is kind of huge.
This is proto-Trinitarian because the Trinity is the 4th century doctrine invented by at the Council of Nicaea. No! It's not proto-Trinitarian. It's not proto-Trinitarian. It just is Trinitarian.
It's right there.
Like, they have a priori decided that the Trinity is a doctrine invented later, and therefore, whenever they find it earlier than when they say it is, they just dismiss it. And that's dumb and bad scholarship. But people do it. It's a pet peeve of mine.
My only thing is... For the majority of the time in these, we mention the Father and the Son, and then this is the first time, well, maybe not the first time, but one of the biggest times that the Spirit, like uppercase Spirit, from this translator, was included. So right after that, be as submissive to the bishop and to one another as Jesus Christ was to his Father. So there you have, like, this parallel. Act like Jesus because he was submissive to the Father. So you, like Jesus, be submissive to these guys who were basically the Father. And as the apostles were to Christ and the Father, so there may be complete unity in the flesh as well as in the Spirit. So with the exclusion of the Spirit, does that have any implications?
I don't think it does. This is still the case now, where the Spirit is the neglected member of the Trinity. Mm-hmm. If you read through the Nicene Creed, which is supposed to be where the Trinity is invented, the Spirit gets like one sentence at the end. Jesus gets like this whole big thing in the middle, and then, and we believe in the Spirit. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of tacked on the end there. We confess the Spirit, and we are confounded by the Spirit, and... thus, it's difficult to talk about the Spirit intelligibly. So the Spirit gets neglected. Even in modern works of theology, you'll find that. It just is. It's a thing that happens again and again and again and again in Christianity. Even by the most ardent Trinitarians, there's a neglect of the spirit.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I have theories about why that is, but I don't have a definitive answer. But I don't think it's strange that Ignatius does the same thing that you'll find C.S. Lewis doing, that you'll find the Nicene Creed doing, that you'll find an Introduction to Systematic Theology, Volume 1 doing. You're going to find it in all over the place, mm-hmm. where the spirit gets tacked on at the end, but largely neglected. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Is that fair? Have you experienced and seen the same thing that I'm pointing to here?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Francis Chan's Forgotten God.
Yeah.
Good book. But yeah, I just like noticed that because I was expecting kind of after that mention, instead of for the listener, if you don't have it in front of you, that first spirit, son, father, and spirit, those are all uppercase. But then at the end, so that there may be complete unity, after mentioning Christ and the Father, in the flesh as well as in the lowercase spirit. So I was like, huh. That's weird. That's a lowercase.
Yeah, and that the lowercasing is just the translator's decision. It might should be uppercase.
Yeah,
because in Greek at this time it's all uppercase, mm-hmm. And it would be pneumat for both of those. Mm. So, same word. Translator made a decision to make one capital and one not. Maybe the spirit there in the Greek is clearly referring to our spirit.
Yes, which I think so with the juxtaposition of flesh.
Yeah, that might mm-hmm. be what's going on. And that is probably clear in the Greek through declensions and the way that Greek grammar works that I don't remember because it's been several years since my Greek classes, but I did get an A, so.
Nice.
That's something. Mm-hmm. Ryan, you want to read 14, 15 in the farewell?
I sure can.
We can close this bad boy down.
Yes, sir. Knowing how amply filled with God you are, I have been brief in these exhortations. Remember me in your prayers so that I may win my way to God, and remember the church in Syria, too, of which I am an unworthy member. I beg for your united prayers and love in God, so that our Syrian church may be refreshed with the sparkling of dew from yours. The representatives of Ephesus send greetings to you from Smyrna, here, where I am writing this. Like yourselves, they are here for the glory of God, and they have been a comfort to me in every way. So too has Polycarp, the Smyrnan bishop. The other churches add their own greetings as well, for the honor of Jesus Christ. Farewell. See that there is a godly unity among you and a spirit that is above all divisions, for this is Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
it's all
oh,
yeah. coming together.
Oh, yeah. That's the good stuff. You guys got anything to point out about that? Or
this is a relatively brief, and this is a question more.
Okay.
This is a relatively brief letter compared to other ones that he's written.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's not lying. I have been brief in these exhortations, knowing how amply filled with God you are.
Yeah. His first epistle to, what is it, the Ephesians? Yeah, the Ephesians. Yeah. That one's a pretty meaty letter. A lot of his other letters are actually pretty short. They're just a couple pages. If I'm recalling correctly, he has an epistle that he writes to Polycarp, and that's 3 pages in my copy. So they average between like 3 and 5.
Gotcha. So rather, instead of the letter, maybe just his exhortations specifically.
Maybe. I think he probably means the letter overall. There are lots of things that he could expound on, lots of things he could say more about, but he chooses not to. He keeps it relatively brief. But yeah, it's definitely shorter than the one to the Ephesians. That's his longest.
Yeah.
It's like 7-8 pages. It's meaty. But he does a lot without a whole lot of words.
Mm-hmm.
Any other things that we would like to say about that as a whole?
No, sir.
Mm-mm.
know, questions or bits of clarification you'd like.
Where do babies come from? And
well, when a mommy and daddy love each other very much.
Uh-huh.
Snip, snip. And then they adopt.
I'll tell you after the podcast.
Not everyone's like you, Jesse.
All right.
Snip. Snip.
Well.
Anyhow, so no questions about the epistle then.
No?
Nah.
If you recall, when we did our first introduction to Ignatius with Jesse, and we went through sections of Ignatius, but not all of Ignatius, as we are doing now. In his epistles to the Ephesians, there's a part where he talks about Jesus Christ as God. And you asked, Jesse, if I thought that was something that Ignatius thought all the way, or if he was a bit more tentative about it, if you remember asking that.
Yes.
Yeah. How do you feel about that question now?
Oh, I mean, like, I think all the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
all the way.
Mm-hmm.
I think so, too. Well, thanks for listening, and next week we'll be back, and we will have the next epistle of Ignatius's, his epistle to the Trallians. So be sure to tune in, and you get to listen to that biz, too.
Yeah. Wait.
And
we are on a cruise.
Yeah. If you're...
Yeah.
We'll be on a cruise while this episode comes out.
Well, I won't be on a cruise.
You still have boat nightmares, so I've been told.
Yeah, I do. I went on a cruise when 2 years ago?
Yeah.
1 year ago? 2 years. It was 2 years ago now. And
never again.
Even though it was perfectly fine. Like, nothing happened. There were no, like, scary incidents.
I learned that I get seasick.
Well, yeah, there is that.
So I was seasick for a week, and
sucks.
It did.
Well,
yeah,
we're just built different.
Yeah, y'all are just sea people.
Yeah. We're anyway, islanders.
Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe.
Yeah.
If you have any questions or anything you want to address to us, you can do so at theologyish@gmail.com. There is no hyphen in the email, but there is one in the show name.
Yeah, be sure to share us with friends so that people can listen to us. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Today's program was made possible by viewers like you and the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation. Just kidding.
I don't know what that is.
It's like a thing that sponsors a lot of PBS shows.
Yeah, so PBS, man.
PBS. Be like, today's show is brought to you by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation and viewers like you. Thank you.